Ladies and gentlemen, Football Scoop Podcast is back. It is September 11th, 2025. We all live in America. God bless this country. It's the greatest country in the world. Gentlemen, today we're talking college football. We're going to talk about this weekend, week three slate. I think it's loaded, personally. Saturday is the best action, but let's start Thursday, Friday, and then let's get to Saturday. Thursday, one game, college football, NC State, Wake. Wake is it's just house money. They don't really care what they do this year. They're just going to have fun and give it everything they got. NC State has been a good team the past couple of years. They always tend to lose one. Is this the one they lose? They haven't been dominant the first 2 weeks. Any thoughts?
I think if this is an NC State loss, then it portends really bad things for the Pack over the course of the year, because you alluded to it. This is a Wake Forest program that largely because it had become a power conference feeder program due to lack of resources in Dave Clawson's final couple of years is really depleted. But the Demon Deacons get this game at home. As you noted, NC State has a couple of single-digit victories, I believe, against East Carolina and Virginia. Virginia certainly had ample opportunity to have won that game last weekend. So, yeah, my only overriding thought is if NC State loses this game, the Pack are in for a really long season.
Good stuff. Yes, I agree. I don't think they are going to lose it, but I agree with you. I didn't think Virginia – well, anyway, yes. Moving right along. Let's go Friday night. Colorado is in Houston. Year two for Willie Fritz. You usually see a nice little step up. But Prime ain't here to lose all these games. So can Colorado shock them?
I mean, I think Houston's first two wins have, yes, they've been wins. Yes, they're 2-0, but they've largely been underwhelming. You know, Stephen F. Austin beat him 27-0, Rice 35-9. Like games you're expected to win and should win. I think the turmoil in the Colorado quarterback room now starting, I think their third different guy, or at least third different quarterback taking the snaps, doesn't inspire a lot of confidence in what's going on at Colorado offensively, at least. Do they have weapons to get the ball to? Sure. Prime's always got a roster full of talent, but this was a hard game to pick, but I gave the tip of the cap to Houston, because if you've got a quarterback carousel going on, that normally doesn't spell great things.
Yeah, I went with Houston as well, largely because it's at home, but this is a huge game for both programs and both teams. Obviously, this season for Colorado is about proving that you can stay where you – the heights you reach to without Travis and Shadur, and Houston's trying to – move up in year two under Willie Fritz. So I think both teams are probably 6-7 win ceiling teams. And for both teams, that to get to your ceiling, it requires a win in this game.
Yeah. And I'm with you guys. Like I nod the home team. Does sound like Colorado will start Ryan Staub. I'd be stunned if they don't play multiple quarterbacks yet again this week, unless Staub is just electric and doesn't leave any door cracked open for them. But it's a conference game, and then Houston goes to Oregon State next weekend, which is an attainable game. So this could be the difference in a 4-0 start versus a 2-2 start for the Cougars. And 4-0, you start feeling really good about where things are going year two under Willie Fritz. 2-2, you're just like, how long is this going to take?
I don't know. I think Staub's pretty good. I think Colorado's going to win this game. I think Houston beats Oregon State regardless. That's a different matter.
Yeah, I see Houston's a 4.5-point favorite, 3 points for home. I don't think either one of these teams are going to be favored a whole lot moving forward once they get in the meat of their Big 12 schedules.
I've been prepared to transition us to Saturday, but there's one more game Friday night. New Mexico's at UCLA. New Mexico gave Michigan way more than they were hoping for. And UCLA is kind of trash.
Yeah, this could be. I mean, this could be a Jason Eck win. The New Mexico will be the better coach team in this game. I don't have any doubt in my mind in that.
And if you're Deshaun Foster, you've got to focus really intently on creating your own energy, because your fans are not going to give you any. It's a 7 p.m. Friday night kick. in the Rose Bowl. Like, this is a friends and family type crowd for the Bruins. It's one that your players probably think, like, ah, we're UCLA. There ain't no way we're going to lose to New Mexico, right? You're not going to be favored very much in Big Ten play. Like, if you lose this one, 0-12 is legit on the table for UCLA. And it's possible you lose this game.
Good point, ZB. There will be more fans at the Mater D game than there will be at this UCLA game.
No doubt.
Certainly more noise. Awesome. I mean, the fans that are going to be there are going to be kicked back with their wine and their cheese. Like, this is going to be a dead atmosphere.
There are fans of UCLA football?
They're in Los Angeles, I heard.
Yeah, moving along. Slander. This is enough. Oregon is going to whitewash Northwestern. Clemson is at Georgia Tech. How's that one play out? Any thoughts?
Haynes King didn't play last weekend. Georgia Tech can't win without Haynes King, but it sounds like Haynes King is trending towards playing this weekend. If Georgia Tech establishes the line of scrimmage like it believes it can and like has become its identity under Brent Key, then I think the Yellow Jackets can win this game for sure.
Who has the better quarterback in this game? And I'm not talking about draft prospects. We all know Klubnik will be drafted before King. But in terms of which quarterback does a better job of executing their respective teams' game plan?
Yeah, I think Haynes King is a better college quarterback. Like, Cade Klubnik is the better prospect and has all the physical tools. Not that Haynes King is small, but I think Haynes King is a better college quarterback. And in this day and age, I would like to hear Doug's thoughts on this, but I feel like you've got to be able to move more than Cade Klubnik can move. And Haynes King can actually move.
And they call plays to get him on the move, yep, in the quarterback run game and using GT counter or GH counter and that kind of stuff, GY counter. I really like Haynes King, but I think the spread, Vegas has a spread at like 2.5 for Clemson. So that Vegas always knows something that even us experts don't know. It's a really close spread for a top 12 team and an unranked team. So I went with Clemson only because I want to believe that Dabo's going to win the games that he should. And that's proven to be kind of a coin toss at times the last 3 or 4 years.
I like Georgia Tech a lot in this game. I guess I'll go on record here, say I think Georgia Tech wins this game. I love Haynes King as a college quarterback. He's extremely fun to watch, but he has one of the most strange throwing motions I've ever seen from a big-time college quarterback. And his dad is a big-time Texas high school coach, so he's been playing quarterback since he could walk, I assume. And it's just – I just find it fascinating that at no point was his throwing motion coached out of him. But it works for him, so I guess fair play. But just – for everyone watching this game, just watch Haynes King throwing motion. There's not another quarterback that throws the ball like he does.
I feel like I would be letting the world down if I didn't share that I, as a baseball player, might have had the single worst throwing motion any human's ever seen. That's why I played first base. It was atrocious.
We need video.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let me see if this exists. State championship game. I do have video of our state championship game my senior year. I do.
Isidore Newman, is that right?
Isidore Newman. Yeah. All right. This will be produced. Good. Not today, but one day. All right. Question for you guys. Is Oklahoma at Temple a trap game in any way?
I don't think so. No.
No.
I agree.
Like Oklahoma going on the road to Temple is so strange that there's no way the Sooner players are going to sleep through this game because they're going to be on the plane. We're playing Temple in Philadelphia in an NFL stadium with 40,000 people. Like this game's going to have their full attention because it's just so odd.
I do like.
I would agree.
I do really like Temple's young offensive coordinator, Tyler Walker. They hired him away, of course, from Montana State after he'd been at the helm of the Montana State offense for about a year. So I like the staff that Casey Keeler has assembled, particularly Tyler Walker. But no, Oklahoma is not going to undo all the equity that it got last weekend with a convincing win against Michigan. And why on earth is Oklahoma going to Temple?
Agreed.
All right. Wisconsin is traveling to Tuscaloosa. Anybody got any thoughts on that game?
I think this is the third straight year Wisconsin has lost their starting quarterback. Now, it's not a season ender. I believe I think Billy Edwards said he was going to warm up, but sprained knee last week or the week before, so he's not set to play. But just brutal luck for the Badgers having to go with quarterback number two here early in the season. And, I mean, a pissed off Alabama squad, whether it's Kalen DeBoer or Nick Saban, is not a team that you want to see already down your starting signal caller. So I think the tide roll.
I don't view Alabama as pissed off. I view them as the kid when your mom yells at you because she just had enough of you not cleaning your room, pick up after yourself, and you and your siblings look around like, guys, we got to be on top of this. And then for the next 3 days, week, you're keeping it spick and span, and then enough time goes by, and eventually you fall back into your bad habits. That's how I view Alabama. If they win at Georgia, I'll revisit. But until then, I expect them to fall back into their bad habits at some point. But for right now, they're still going to be on their best behavior.
Get a load of this Wisconsin schedule and what is an absolute, in my opinion, make or break year for Luke Fickell. They're at the Tide this weekend, and then they host Maryland. So certainly that has to be a winnable game for the Badgers at home, regardless of who's quarterback. But after that, you got Michigan, Iowa, Ohio State, Oregon, Washington, Indiana, and Illinois consecutively. And then you close your season at Minnesota, which PJ Fleck has a big one this weekend as well. But My goodness, I mean, Wisconsin needs something. Like, if they're able to steal a win, then it changes the tenor of the season. If they're not, and I don't think they will be able to, then you're just talking about how much the gauntlet is about to descend upon them.
Their season win total is 4.5, and we did a show, you know, in August on who we thought might over and under, and I kind of mentioned them as an under 4.5. I don't think they get this win. I don't think they beat Maryland either, which is quite a statement. And that tells you how I see the rest of the season going. All right, Memphis is at Troy. Memphis is a small, like, field goal favorite because Troy showed up against Clemson in that first half and battled. Memphis handle this, or is this a toss-up?
Troy has, when you look at the the last month of last season carried over into this year, you can see it starting to turn in the vision that Jared Parker has for it. Their quarterback, Goose, is a really nice player, began his career at West Virginia. Last year might have been different for Troy in year one under GP if Goose hadn't gotten hurt. I want to say second possession of the game at Iowa State, and then the season just sort of unraveled from there. Troy has some really nice skill position speed and has a little bit more speed on defense. I just think that Memphis, when it's all said and done, is going to have a voice in who the G5 team is for the playoff this year.
Tulane started off really good against South Alabama. South Alabama came roaring back. Tulane hung on, got the win. South goes up to Auburn this week. I think Auburn wins the game. I think South is in that one for a good while. Any other quick thoughts there? No takers. We're moving right along. Georgia is at Tennessee. Rocky Top. John Bryce, that means you're up.
Tennessee has not won this game at home in a decade. It has not won, period, in the series since 2016. It has never beaten Kirby Smart in Neyland Stadium as a coach. Beat Kirby Smart a couple of times as a player inside Neyland Stadium in 95 and 97 and I think 99. But this is a pivot moment for Tennessee. Heupel has yet to beat Georgia. I think he's beaten every other what used to be the SEC East. He's beaten about every other SEC Eastern Division foe other than the Bulldogs. This is the last kind of frontier for Josh Heupel to stamp that his program is top four in the SEC. I know they went to the playoff last year, bounce back from a really nasty loss at Arkansas to be able to earn that at-large playoff bid in what I think was a year that they benefited from not having Texas on the schedule and getting Alabama at home and a couple other games. So Tennessee's going to have to be able to run the football. I do think that they need Joey Aguilar to make some plays with his legs in this game. And then I'm not so sure you can't heat up Stetson Bennett and turnover, or I mean Stockton and turnover the Bulldogs.
So here's some numbers: 5.1, 5.9, 4.1, 6.6. That's the yards per attempt of Tennessee quarterbacks against Georgia under Josh Heupel. And Josh Heupel's offense thrives by giving the ball to open receivers down the field, and that just has not happened against Georgia. To use a basketball analogy, Tennessee's not going to be able to pound the ball in the paint and hit dunks against Georgia. You got to hit three-pointers. And Georgia has kept a lid on Tennessee's passing offense. And until that happens, they're not going to beat Georgia. I mean, I just recall the 2022 Tennessee win when they were just hitting open receivers. I mean, Jalin Hyatt had 5 touchdown catches in that game.
So you don't need to probably
get you don't need to get to 52 to win this game, I don't think, but you're going to need to get above 17, and that's kind of been their limit against the Bulldogs.
I actually like Tennessee in this matchup. That's who I picked in our pick'ems. I believe the stat for coaches, and I know I'll get corrected by text by a couple guys, but if you win the explosive play battle, you win like 76-78% of games. And I think that's where Georgia has come up short. Is their defense going to be great? Yes, but Tennessee's offense centered on vertical choice is designed for big plays and to get chunks in the run game. And so if there's any year to get that back on track, I think it's this year. And Georgia has really struggled. I was just looking at their plays over 20 yards on the year, and they're ranked like 75th nationally. So they struggle getting big plays. Tennessee starves or eats or feasts on big plays. And so I think that's what this one comes down to. And I got the needle point to Tennessee.
That's good data there, Doug. And I think it's important to note that now, look, last week was a sloppy field. But Georgia has played Marshall under first-year head coach Tony Gibson and Austin Peay, FCS program under second-year coach Rising Star Jeff Ferris. So Georgia has struggled to generate any chunk plays, and it's yet to face a power conference opponent. Again, Syracuse did great things last year. It's going to take a step back this year, but Tennessee generated chunk plays by the buckets in week one against Syracuse in Atlanta. They're not as good at the wide receiver core as they were, that 22 team that Zach mentioned, but they like some of their young talent. They've got to cut down on drops. For all the explosives that they had against Syracuse, they had a number of drops in that game, and they can't afford those sort of lapses against the Georgia team that doesn't let you extend drives when you have your own miscues that get you in third downs.
JB, that 1995 game, I was in Neyland. It was quite a night.
I was there as well.
How about that? How about that? Good stuff. All right. Backyard brawl. Pitt, WVU. What do we think, gentlemen?
Man, is West Virginia going to be able to get back on track after the loss to Ohio last week? It's That's a coin flip for me. I like a pissed off Rich Rod squad as much as probably anyone, but I believe I took the Fighting Pat Narduzzi's and Pitt in this one, just because he's been there. He's got his culture established, so that's where the scales tip for me.
This is Rich Rod's first game against Pitt since the game against Pitt, and I can't think of a game. A single loss more damaging to a program than that one was for West Virginia. So obviously a win here would not erase that by any means, but it sure would be better than the alternative. Unfortunately, I don't see that happening. As Doug said, Pitt's just so much further along in their culture. Rich Rod doesn't have the quarterback he needs to truly operate his offense. And Eli Holstein for Pitt's playing good football. So I like the road team.
Yeah, and Des Reed, I think, is the difference in this game. I just think West Virginia will have a hard time getting on the field because I think that Pitt's defense, we know, is always incredibly sound, and hopefully Cade Bell gives a steady diet of Des Reed this week. And that's the key for the Panthers. If something happens and West Virginia steals this game, then look out Pitt, because as we've noted, they're coming off back-to-back years where they've lost 11 combined ACC games, and they started last year 7-0 and won their, and then lost their last six games, and they had plummeted the year before as well. So this is a sneaky, really, really important game for Pat Narduzzi and the Panthers.
Yeah, I feel like West Virginia's quarterback situation is Pitt should come in there and handle things. West Virginia's kind of sneaky. Rich is a great football coach. I don't expect it to happen. I think Pitt wins the game. But if West Virginia's in a battle and finds a way to sneak it out, ooh, Pitt starts to unravel quick. So hopefully, yeah.
It's interesting. I talked to some Pitt folks this week, and they were just sort of like, look, we don't like these guys, but these dudes effing hate us. They hate us. And yeah, if you are so inclined to peruse the West Virginia fan Twitter, that's this week's version of last week's Kansas-Missouri is this week's West Virginia fan Twitter towards Pitt. It's nuts.
Golly, when you said Kansas, it just made my mind recognize. I skipped right over Friday night's K-State at Arizona. Golly, Arizona's undefeated, and K-State's favored in that game.
And it's also not a conference game because it was scheduled before the new league was formed. It is a non-conference game, just like the remind me of the one last week, JP.
Yeah,
kind of same deal there, or similar deal.
Yep, very similar. I like the Wildcats at home to get it done. You're two under Brent Brennan. They've got to show progress. Probably left some wins on the field last year, especially for the talent they had with Tateroa McMillan and the offensive lineman whose name escapes me, but I think he was like a top 40 pick. So you had the number 8 pick and like the top 40 pick in the NFL draft last year, and you only won 4 games. So I like the home team in this one. That's sort of what I defaulted to, and I think that Arizona's probably playing with a little more confidence right now than K-State.
I like the Wildcats in this one.
Attaboy. That was brave. Okay, moving right along. The Bulls are coming into Miami. South Florida Bulls riding high. A lot of confidence. Can they stand up and beat Carson Beck and the Hurricane?
No.
Yeah, I thought Carson Beck looked really impressive in their opening week win. The weather does call, I believe, for thunderstorms and like 83 degrees or something like that, low 80s. So you got to go with the experienced quarterback and talking deep choice from Tennessee. That's what Alex Gullish brought to South Florida for their explosive offense. But you got to go with a veteran quarterback at home, I think, in that matchup.
Okay, I want to throw something at you guys because I heard a national pundit say that this week while I was doing my grocery shopping, and it nearly exploded the AirPods out of my ear. So I heard, considering the equity that South Florida already has in the bank with its 2-0 start, and considering that the true mission, win or lose, is to go win the American, you combine those two things, you're in the playoff. Considering the house money South Florida is playing with in this game, do you consider resting guys in pursuit of the greater mission?
Not
I heard that.
No.
And it knocked me on my keister, and I just wanted to throw that at you and see what y'all thought.
Yeah, because you feel like
punch that person in the face.
Yeah, that violence isn't the answer, Scott. And how about Zach's humble brag about having AirPods? Must be nice. but it's week 3. So first of all, that's a slap in the face to competing. Oh,
man.
And second of all, you got no guarantees. Just even if you do go win the American and you're sitting there 11-1 and then win the AAC title game or whatever, so you're 12-1, there's still too many other variables to know if you would be the team or not. So while I don't think South Florida can win this game, I do think that the playoff committee would be mindful of the fact that you had a game against the big boy and you set some dudes. Like, I think that would ultimately hurt South Florida in the eyes of the selection committee. I certainly would view that very punitively. And then also, but ultimately to me, the key is like what Miami showed on both lines of scrimmage against a Notre Dame team that expects, especially on the offensive line, to be very good and returned 4 of 5 starters and had a 5-star redshirt freshman at right guard to open that game as well. And Miami whipped Notre Dame in the trenches in that contest for most of the night. And Notre Dame, actually, I just looked this up, had only finished with 93 net rushing yards in that contest. They had 40-plus yards, lost yards, in that game against Miami. That's why I think Miami wins. Doug's point about Carson Beck is right. He's getting the ball out quick, too, and he's got more playmakers than he had a year ago at Georgia. Marty Brown is running the ball well for them. But I think Miami controls this game because Miami controls both lines of scrimmage.
You guys are straight up college football experts. I like to listen to what you think. I'm torn on this one. I think this is the last possession.
Pick the Bulls. Pick the Bulls then, Scott.
I'm like I want to pick the Bulls, but
those
I like
of us in my place want you to pick the Bulls.
I don't listen to weird what Zach calls pundits. I don't listen to anybody else talk football. I listen to you two, you three. I'm here for this. This is where I get my knowledge.
We appreciate that.
Texas A&M is at Notre Dame. This is going to be a battle. It's obviously, clearly, a massively important game for Notre Dame. Zach told us better chance they go 0-2 than, you know, win 10.5 plus. JB, what do you see there in South Bend?
Well, if Zach's right, if Notre Dame goes 0-2, then their season's over. Like, I really believe that because there's nothing – if they go 0-2 with this game at home, under the lights, sold out, what makes you believe they could rip off 10 wins in a row? I know they had to do it last year. But last year they had already banked a road win at A&M and then slept walked through against Northern Illinois. And Northern Illinois hit two plays that were the difference in the game. Notre Dame missed a bunch of field goals. They claim Riley Leonard wasn't hurt, but he never ran the ball the entire second half. Notre Dame didn't win games that Riley Leonard didn't run the football effectively. This is a trench battle. I did not think that Marcus Freeman's team met the physicality and met the challenge in the front lines in the opener against Miami. That's the first time I think since Marcus took over that I can remember them failing to meet the physical challenge. They've been beaten by better teams during Marcus Freeman's tenure. They very rarely have not answered the physical call. I do expect Notre Dame to answer the physical call this week. And hopefully to God, for the sake of college football, Notre Dame isn't on its 7th possession and Jeremiah Love has 5 touches, which was the case against Miami.
Well, I think people have talked about that, and of course it's unforgivable if you're Notre Dame, but I think equally unforgivable is that Jaden Greathouse didn't touch the ball. I think Jaden Greathouse is one of the 5 best receivers in college football.
Wow.
He was – I stand on that. I think if there was a all-playoff team – last year's playoff, the receivers are Jeremiah Smith and Jaden Greathouse.
1,000%. You're absolutely right. And you're right.
So, yeah, you got to force the ball to Love. You also got to get the ball to Greathouse, too.
They tried, to their credit. I think he was targeted 3 times, and one of those ended up being basically the game-deciding pick because Notre Dame had feasted or tried to feast too much on the flare screen or the quick out, and – number 1 for Miami read it perfectly and broke it up between Greathouse and Faison. Notre Dame had 2 guys there, Faison and Greathouse, and he broke it up. And I think Reuben Bain came over from the D-line spot and made the diving interception. And that's what set up Miami to kick the game-winning field goal. So I agree. Like, I think Greathouse is a really, really good college wide receiver. I would probably put his new teammate, Malachi Fields, a spot above him, and we know Scott loved the Malachi Fields catch in week 1 against Miami. But Notre Dame has to win this on the ground, and A&M has proved surprisingly vulnerable a little bit through 2 games. That's just 2 games, and you could say they were probably pretty vanilla, but but they've played UTSA. That's not as good as what we've seen out of UTSA in recent years. And they've played Utah State, which is completely rebuilding under Bronco Mendenhall. But the Aggies have already given up 281 yards rushing total through two games. That is not what made A&M an SEC and playoff contender through most of last season until the Aggies faded.
I just want to point out.
Oh, go ahead.
So Zach had Notre Dame more likely to start off 0-2, but who'd you pick in your picks this week, Zach? Didn't you pick Notre Dame?
I think I did. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I didn't say it was. I just said more likely.
Okay.
I just said more likely. This is about Marcel Reed and that A&M receiver core. KC Concepcion and Mario Craver, two guys they brought in from Mississippi State and NC State, respectively, have kind of emerged so far. It's early as go-to targets for Reed. They're the only A&M pass catchers with more than five catches. The A&M wants to lean on its run game, but I think you got to throw to get the lead, and then you got to run to keep the lead. I don't think you're going to be able to come on the road and win. The Notre Dame offensive line against the A&M D line, I think, is advantage Notre Dame. So you don't want them to be leaning on you late in the game. You got to have the lead and protect it. So I'm going to be watching Reed in passing situations very intently in this game.
I don't know if you guys can see, that's a receipt. Doug is keeping them. He just kept one on you, ZB. Marcel Reed is the wild card to me. Can Notre Dame, last year he at times made some poor decisions and turned the ball over. He has not done that this year. Notre Dame didn't have any takeaways against Miami. It has to have a couple of takeaways, I think, to win this game.
I just want to add real quick, looking at their schedule, this is their last currently ranked team, but you look at the remaining part of Notre Dame's schedule, Purdue at Arkansas, Boise State is maybe ranked at that time, perhaps. NC State, USC is probably the only other team that has a possibility of being a top 25 team by the time they play. You got Boston College, Navy at Pitt, against Syracuse and Stanford. So not like if they want to pelt for the board, it's got to be this week, because you've got one remaining chance to see a ranked team, I think, on the rest of the Irish schedule.
I tried to explain to you guys how hard it would be for the Irish to win the national championship with a guy who had never thrown a pass in college football. I mean, this is like almost impossible type hard. Okay, we're about to go into the SEC land. That whole 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock window has a bunch of SEC games. We're gonna get there. But I got a real question. We have one college football coach, high school football coach, on here, Doug Samuels. I think if you're 32 minutes into this podcast, you know Doug Samuels is a ball coach. Doug, I've got a question for you. Fourth and two, would you ever, ever throw the wide receiver screen behind the line of scrimmage on fourth and two?
I can't think of a situation, but there's so many other factors that go into that.
Thank you. Thank you, Doug. I love you. That's it.
On the field? Has the wide receiver screen broken for a 50-yard game? There are other things that matter.
The answer is I would never, ever throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage on fourth and two. Ever. That's it.
I would agree.
Moving on. Great job. All right. In the SEC, let's talk about some big games. Arkansas is at Ole Miss. Ole Miss wants to show they're ready to go. Arkansas always befuddles them. What do we have? What do we think there, guys?
Huge opportunity for Sam Pittman. I mean, you got to show something. And this is an attainable win. Austin Simmons, it looks like he's going to play. But you like your guy. Taylen Green's a good college quarterback. If you're going to keep this job, you got to go on the road and win. This is a yardstick game, I think, for Sam Pittman.
Agreed.
Yeah. As noted, because Arkansas has this game this weekend, at Memphis next weekend, and then hosts Notre Dame. You don't want to potentially close September riding a three-game losing streak, which I think is a very real possibility for the Hogs. I think you make a great point at the quarterback position, ZB. To me, this is – if Arkansas is going to win, it has to be on the arms and shoulders and legs of Taylen Green, and because I don't think Ole Miss is particularly settled yet at quarterback. I know Simmons is the guy, but they're missing Jackson Dart for sure, and I still contend they're missing Luke Altmyer.
The Simmons played really well. The injury threw some weirdness into it. That next kid, you know, it was late in the game when he came in, but he looked pretty interesting too. But Simmons is a dude. I wouldn't.
Didn't he have a couple of early picks last week, though? I mean,
he did. Early on. He had an early pick, yes.
And that kid that came in, Trinidad Chambliss, product of Grand Rapids, Michigan. He was a seventh grader when I was at Forest Hills Northern. And we had him throwing in high school 7-on-7s just for fun. But he'd go out there and throw some stops as a seventh grader against a bunch of high school kids. And now he's, you know, after winning a national title at Ferris, got to see him play in SEC country is a pretty cool deal.
Pretty awesome. LSU hosts Florida. LSU needs to exert some dominance. It ain't going to be easy. Florida's going to give them way more than they want. What do we see there?
Florida is kind of like a like they've got a limp to them. I think if LSU is able to absolutely put it on them, then we see the end of the road for Billy Napier in Florida. I see your face, but Florida is a wounded animal right now. And if LSU can manage to put together a great game and just put it away early, it's the boo birds are going to be out in full force.
Yeah. I mean, to Doug's point, I don't think Doug's suggesting that Billy Napier gets run on Sunday if they lose this game.
No.
But this will be if he loses this game particularly ugly and Florida looks like it's not fighting for him, then it'd be the point of no return for Billy Napier.
Because
Florida won't come in and not fight. They're a wounded gator is a dangerous animal. That's what's coming in Tiger Stadium.
Well, you would know because you have them all over your neck of the woods as well as all over Florida.
Right, but right if they
don't freaking fight their gator tails off, they're in a world of trouble because they go to Miami next week, then an open date, and then they've got Texas A&M, Mississippi State, and Georgia. But I don't think Billy Napier wants to possibly be staring down the barrel of a three-game losing streak going into an open date on September 27th. I think that's a pretty dire circumstance for the Gators, but I think that's what's facing the Gators. That's what I expect to happen to the Gators.
And maybe that three-game losing streak is survivable if you hadn't lost to South Florida last week. But you lose to three top 10 teams, like, okay, you tip your cap and say, good job, SEC. But you can't do that and lose to South Florida. Those two,
especially when you had a player help facilitate the win by a complete lack of composure and personal foul penalty late in the game that sustained the drive and really made it an extra point for the victory. And again, year four, like you can say, okay, well, we're going to change that culture if you're year one or year two. Year four, it's your culture. That happened in your culture.
Agreed.
And I find myself, this is not something I expected to say preseason, but here we are. The unit that I trust most in this game is the LSU defense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think LSU's offense has explosive capabilities. I think LSU wins this game by 10 points. I think it's an absolute battle. I think Florida's defensive front is going to pressure Nussmeier. He's gonna pop a couple. I think LSU's defense wins the game for them. They're going to give Lagway all sorts of havoc. And I see LSU winning the game, but I think Florida – Billy Napier's guys, they fight for him.
Under the lights in Death Valley, that's significant. Yep.
Amen. All right, Vanderbilt is at South Carolina. I think this is a good football game. I wouldn't be surprised to see either team win, to be honest.
I think you can.
I mean, just to show how crazy this week is, I'm currently in the middle of On the Line. I'm almost 2,200 words in, and I haven't even gotten to either one of these games yet.
That is crazy.
I was just getting ready to say, I think you can make the argument behind Tennessee, Georgia, this is the most compelling game in the SEC this weekend. Like, the quarterback play should be sublime when you got Diego Pavia on one side and Lenore Sellers on the other. And then how random that two SEC teams share a common opponent, ACC team, by week three of the season, yet they've both already beaten Virginia Tech. Vanderbilt did it more convincingly than South Carolina, for whatever that means, at Virginia Tech, whereas South Carolina was at a neutral site against the Hokies.
In the second half, yeah. The first half, it wasn't really that convincingly. South Carolina opened up their lead, just kind of hung on and had some special teams. Awesome. Anyway, whatever. All right. Duke's quarterback used to be Tulane's quarterback. Now he's leading the Blue Devils back into New Orleans. John Sumrall continues John Sumrall magic?
Yes.
Or?
Roll wave. John Sumrall gets another win that makes him the coveted of numerous P5 programs by the time we're in late October, mid-November.
Hey, we saw Aaron Rodgers open the season at the Jets, and that's a common thing you see in pro sports, and now we get the equivalent in college football, just how far we've come.
And you could make the argument Tulane upgraded. You know, because of that, they wind up with Jake from BYU, and all of a sudden, yeah, I got a pretty good quarterback too. Well, he stays healthy. All right, a game I didn't expect to be talking about before the season started, but Minnesota's at Cal. Both teams were undefeated. Toss-up? What do you think, guys?
I do. I think it's a toss-up. You know, Cal likes their quarterback, but I don't think he's yet to the level that Mendoza was, but Mendoza is now IU's quarterback. So, I don't know. These are the games that I feel like PJ Fleck just finds a way to win, and for better or worse, Cal has found a way to lose. So that's why I'm rowing the boat on dry land.
I'm excited to get eyes on Jaron Kiava Tagovailoa. That's Cal's quarterback, and I'm the only person in the national media with the guts to say it.
No, I said it last week on the podcast.
JB is a professional pronunciation.
I'm the only one with the guts to say it today.
Yeah, that's right, because I don't have it in front of me, and I can't say it without, like, sounding it out in my head first.
Coming into the season, I did expect Arizona State to be a two-touchdown-plus favorite over Texas State. I did not expect that I'm picking Texas State, but here we are, gentlemen.
Just to roll back, to tie it together, what I said earlier is we talked about Duke Tulane and Darian Minta, his situation. I hate that in college football, the thought is when week one happens, like, wow, Cal's got a true freshman quarterback that's a dude. And then immediately the chatter is, well, he's not going to be playing for Cal next year. Who's he going to be playing for? And he might not be playing for Cal next year. Who knows? I mean, I don't know, but that's the world we live in.
So is that, Scott, you got Texas State in that one? I feel
– winner.
I feel like Arizona State kind of – Cam Scadabo was just like the heartbeat of that team, brought the intensity and the grit. And when you lose a dude like that, it's really hard to recover from. And I think Kenny's put together one of the best staffs in college football, a bunch of – Arizona dudes that love Arizona, want to activate the Valley. But when you lose the heartbeat of your team, like a Cam Scadabo that, you know, had that grimace on his face when he made plays, like he just played with such an edge. It's really, really hard to replace a dude like that. So yeah. I am going Arizona State, but I do think Texas State puts up a good fight.
Yeah, Doug, I completely with you. And the thing that I struggle with is, we all believe in the Arizona State coaching staff, and obviously they all saw this issue coming back in January. So I have to believe they spent the last 8 months developing new – I mean, you can't replace Scadabo as a player, but certainly you can develop new leaders to replace him. And it seems like from the beginning, everything you've heard about Arizona State is this seems like a team that will play Cam will bail us out. Third and eight, Cam will bail us out. Well, we're down 17 – Cam will bail us out. And they came back and took the lead at Mississippi State. But this has just been playing like a team that sleptwalk all season long. So I have Arizona State in my fantasy team. And if they don't pull out of this funk, I might have to spend a July weekend next summer in the Tux. So I'm desperately hoping that Arizona State wins this game, but I picked them, but I can't say it with full confidence.
I picked Arizona State, but I'm rethinking it now. If I can see you have to be forced into wearing a tux.
I'm around Texas State, so we're good there. We're covered. All right, Doug, coaching question for you. This is not easy. I'm not going to give you all the blah, blah, blah. I know you want to know the facts and how's the quarterback playing, all that crap. Okay, so Arizona State is at Mississippi State, and I don't remember the exact specifics, but they're basically facing fourth and goal on like the one or the two, maybe the three, but I think it's about the two, just inside 2 minutes. They're like a minute 50, something like that. I think Mississippi State has no timeouts, something like that. They're up three currently. They can kick the field goal and go up six with about a minute 50, and Mississippi State gets the ball back. Or they can try to score, put the game away for a touchdown. If not, they still got to go 99 yards. Kenny D kicked the field goal, went up six. What do you do in that situation, Doug? What are your thoughts?
I think you're on the road. That plays a factor in that decision. If you can go for the jugular and end it, then great. I think the chances of scoring a touchdown when you start inside your own 5 yard line are something like 3% or something like that, like astronomically low. Mm-hmm. So I think on the road you go for the jugular. You try and put that game away. And again, I mean, to come back to Cam, like if you have a Cam Scatabo back there, there's no question you hand that ball off and go for the jugular, right? Yeah. But you don't have that guy. You know, sometimes you think you have to take the points. I'm a go for the jugular. We were in a similar situation last weekend. Like I wanted points and points and points. We were going for two and things like that. But yeah, go for the jugular. Try and end it, and then. If you got a 3% chance of scoring inside the five and that's what you need, then good luck, dude. Defense, buckle up.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think they had kind of run it on third down right at the middle, got stoned, and they're like, we ain't got Cam. Yeah, anyway, live and learn. Gentlemen, this has been a great pleasure. Anybody want to close anything else out? Any other games?
I got to talk one bottom of the barrel matchup, Akron and UAB. Did not expect to talk that matchup in the podcast. Nope. Joe Moorhead has gone from offensive savant at Penn State, did a nice job in Mississippi State, was at Oregon. They have yet to score a touchdown this year with games against Wyoming. They lost 10-0, and then Nebraska put it on them last weekend, 68-0. So they're looking for their first points against the Fighting Trent Dilfords.
And it's Jimmy's and Joe's, and Joe doesn't have them.
Yeah, that seems
that's to be. That's just what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Zach,
I just want to point out Ohio and Ohio State, two notes of how much the Big Ten hates its fans, is Ohio State finally gets a night home game, and it's on Peacock. And this is a reunion of when Rufus the Bobcat attacked Brutus Buckeye. Before their 2010 game, I'll have an exclusive video of it in On the Line, which will probably be out by the time you hear this. But yeah.
Beautiful. JB, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued by Iowa State going to Jonesboro, Arkansas to face the Fighting Butch Joneses. They did not put up much fight last week against Arkansas, but Butch got the Tennessee job because he had a penchant for notching some of these upsets, first at Central Michigan, then at Cincinnati. So I do think this is a little bit of a trap game for the Cyclones. That's probably one that I'll keep more than just a casual eye on mid-afternoon.
Gentlemen, I'll be in Oxford watching Razorbacks, Rebs. We'll see what happens. Y'all have a great weekend. Doug, good luck with your team Friday night. And we'll catch up there by Sunday morning on the Recap Podcast. Football Scoop Podcast is out.